Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, it's my favourite season. It's another series of my favourite season, and we are looking at 2018. And when we sent out the email asking what season people wanted to pick, we got lots of responses with lots of different seasons, but coming back with this one, we got Sean O'Donnell, you got Dan Austin, and we got Phil Blundell. So, I mean, I guess the place to start, Sean, is why did you pick 18-19? I mean,
apart from the fact that we won the European Cup. To be honest with you, I did have a good think about it because there's been quite a lot of good seasons lately. I think 18-19 for me, I think this is when we became like the cock of the walk, if you like. You think about all the stories from the 80s and, you know, how the people were, you know, going by train to all the aways, being like the best team in the land, being the best team in Europe. And I don't think we've quite experienced that until this season. And I think that, you know, obviously it's off the back of Kiev, but Kiev, you could argue, we sort of get there unexpectedly. You've got, you know, Van Dijk only comes in the January of that season. This is his first full season as a Liverpool player, and I think, you know, well, the results speak for themselves, but it just felt as a supporter group, as a fan group, this is where we really like stood up and went, right, we are this team now, we are really good. And, you know, other than the football, I think like just the nights out that we had in this season are quite memorable. I feel like, you know, every week there was something, whether it be, you know, a massive league game, massive European game. On a personal point of view, you know, Boss Night was really sort of coming into its pomp in this season. Obviously, we were off the back of Kiev, but some of the memorable nights that were there that I'm sure we'll come on to talk about, just, yeah, memories
from one of the brands. Yeah.
I'll do that. I'll sound to you later.
I was with you for a lot of 17, 18, Dan, and I don't know if you remember, but you had a great time. You were loving it. So for you to go for another season, it must have been pretty special for you.
Yeah, well, I sort of settled on, I think the calendar year 2019 is the best time that I've had following Liverpool, so it became a choice between the two, 18-19 or 19-20, and this feels like the sort of perfect point of the story under this manager, I would say. 17-18 was brilliant, but it didn't quite have the thing at the end to all kind of dance around and celebrate. This felt like, as Sean says, I guess, when Liverpool really were the best team in Europe, I felt. And also, I think when you look back with this, you know, this is a fair bit of distance now from today to this season. You sort of think about your own life. So this was like a important time in my life. So the first half of this season, I lived in Belgium and wasn't actually at the match loads. I was coming back for quite a few. So it was a totally like different way of experiencing following them, having gone pretty much everywhere in 17, 18 to then, oh, I live in this other country and I'm going to have to pick and choose the ones that I go back for. And I was watching with like new and different mates who, all like there were three or four of them that supported Liverpool when I lived there, but all with really different backgrounds and for different reasons. Some families, some had just fell in love with football and gone for Liverpool for whatever reason. So it felt like a lot of change for me. I was like 23 at the time as well. So it's like post uni, you've got like enough money to be going to match and stuff and staying out after and all of that kind of thing. So it just felt like the perfect time in my life really for Liverpool to be good. And for me to be sharing it with like loads and loads of different people. And I think, I'm sure as we talk, what will come across is that the people you shared it with and the experiences you had with them are the thing that actually matter. And it's great if the football team is good as well and they managed to match that up. But the things that you look back on and remember are not, oh, such and such came on in the 70th and then did this brilliant thing. It's more, oh, afterwards we went to such and such a place and these 10 people were there and this is why that was great. So for me, you know, the whole time under this manager has been brilliant for all of that, but this was probably the best one.
Fantastic. Bang off for being low on detail, high on vibes, Dan. Don't worry about that. I made a career off it. Phil, you're old. You've had loads of
things. I was going to say, Dan talking about this was when he was 23. I got Hodgson when I was 23. quite the contrast.
Yeah, it is. It is better. And he's better looking than me and you. And, you know. Speak for yourself. That would be that instance. I don't know where I'm going with this. That would be lost. It was fucking boss season to support Liverpool.
It was great. I think the thing that I enjoyed so much about it was is that obviously 17-18 season ends in European Cup final. It's got that City away game. It's got Liverpool just looking fantastic. But at the same time, you didn't know how long it was for. You were sort of looking at it going, well, this is good, but seen sort of Liverpool be good for 6 months before, and then this season told you that it wasn't 6 months. This was a long term thing. This was a journey that has got us to where we are today. It's got European Cup, it's got a league title. We win every week pretty much as well at stages of this season. It's not quite the season after in terms of we've dropped 2 points in the middle of spring or whatever it was. There were long winning runs. There's one defeat in the league. There's great nights. There's Bayern Munich away. There's incredible comeback against Barcelona. There's moments like there's Pickford against Everton. There's Origi at Newcastle, which was a wild sort of mid, 37th game of the season celebration that made you think, well, we can win this league. There's just so many things. There's just so much that went on. You look at even in September, we play PSG and Firmino scores a 94.
I feel like Phil's doing like a montage they do at the start of a documentary.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
I'm into it. Yeah. Carry on.
But there was so much cumulatively that made you think, right, this is the Liverpool. Yeah. This is the Liverpool that I've basically wanted all my life that we never really had. Because, none of us remember Liverpool in the 70s and the 80s, do we? So we had scraps. And I say scraps in a really sort of pathetic manner because I've seen Liverpool win the European Cup before. And I've seen Liverpool nearly win a league in 2009 or whatever and stuff like that. But it wasn't consistent. And this was telling you that Liverpool were going to be consistent.
When we went on stage in Kiev, Neil started it by talking about the last game of the season before, which was the 3-0 to qualify for the Champions League. And so I sort of feel like I should do that with it being Kiev. It might have been the first time we met Kiev, actually. Sure, it might have been sort of backstage at that. And, it was brilliant Kiev in a variety of different ways and we had a great experience with our respective organisations of being on stage in that park, but a lot of Liverpool fans were there and we did come back with hope and excitement and belief and a determination that this was just the start really. And I don't think a team in the history of football have lost the European Cup final better than Liverpool did that last year, but it felt like that even the day after.
Yeah, I'd completely agree. I think, if I'm asked to pick a favourite moment or favourite weekend from, Liverpool following days, I think I'd probably pick Kiev just because, you mentioned vibes before. I think the vibes in Kiev in that park that day was something that none of us will ever forget. The thing that I always think about looking back is Klopp singing in the airport, that video of him singing in the airport. And after we've been beat, and he's such a confident guy. And I remember thinking, I'm not sure, Jürgen, I know that was great that we got there, but are we going to come back next year? Are we going to win it again next year? I think knowing him now and knowing some of the comments he said on the parade after Paris, we'll be back next year. He's so confident. He's so cocksure, if you like. And he was proven right in this season. And I think that's so important because we were all in a good place. I say a good place. We were in a good place because we got to the final. Obviously it hurt not to win it. I don't think any of us actually thought that we're not going to be back here anytime soon. I think we all thought it's going to come again. I just don't think we thought it'd be the season after. I think Kiev sets this season up perfectly. The run to Kiev, I remember being proud of Liverpool for the first time in a long time. Those Champions League games against City and Roma, and like just like stood on the cop for those games and just thinking, whoa, this really is a throwback. This is big. I just hope we can harness it and continue it. And, you know, Kiev, obviously we didn't win it, but as we've just touched on there, the manager was confident and it gave us the confidence to go on to do what we did the following season.
Yeah, it was a great week supporting Liverpool on the back of a great season. And obviously don't want to talk about the state of the season before too much, but Kiev does feel like the springboard to what is to come and how the team played. But also the fact that we were quite easily able to identify what we needed to do and what the team needed to do and what the manager needed to do to make that step forward. And he signed one of them and you weren't even home yet.
No, we were in Dortmund, weren't we? I remember being stood in the at Olimpsky Stadium with full-timers. They were lifting the trophy with a big beaming grin on my face, like a moron. Everyone around me was gutted. I hope you won't mind me saying, but John Milburn had cried into my shoulder really quite intensely, to be honest. Other people had taken it a lot more heavily than I had. I think the circumstances of what happened, obviously there's the stuff with the goalkeeper, but I'd also seen what is to this day the best goal I've ever seen in my life, and I don't think it'll ever be beaten. And it felt a bit to me like, well, if they can bring that off the bench, then we're just not quite there yet, but we're on the way to that. And what we need is maybe a few players like that on top of the ones we've already got, some who are the absolute best in the world that you can rely on in the big moments, and we'll be absolutely fine. And then, yeah, over the course of the next like 2 months, they basically went and bought various ones of them. The two Brazilians in particular, who didn't revolutionise the side because they were already playing in a similar way, but just took two roles where Liverpool were, in some regard, weak. You know, the goalkeeper simply wasn't good enough. Henderson at the time had done a lot of the playing at the base of midfield. Ronaldo had done a little bit of it. Emre Can had done a little bit of it. And none of it was quite a perfect fit. They went and bought the two people that were the perfect fit for the places in the team that they needed them. And having seen Alisson play, you know, we'd all seen him in that two-legged tie when Roma came. And I had seen Fabinho play a few times, including once in the flesh. I felt pretty confident that these were going to be excellent footballers that would really take Liverpool up a level. And I think it maybe took 3 or 4 months to be absolutely convinced, you know, these really are amongst the very best in the position in the world. But from early doors, you could tell, all right, this is going to help. At the very least, this is going to be significantly better than what came before. And that meant that, you know, we are obviously defining this as this, like, you know, 9-10 month period of this season. But that's why it did feel like a continuation, because nothing was kind of ripped up. It was, well, this has got us this far, and it was brilliant, and we came really, really close to winning like the ultimate trophy in club football. And this is what we're going to do to carry that on. And I think the combination of them doing the, you know, the practical things, the buying the footballers to do that, and of all of us going, well, you know what, we'll maybe take it badly today, but from tomorrow we're all right back, bang up for it again, just meant that the momentum felt like it was just constantly there. Didn't really feel like there'd been a gap, which is probably helped by the fact that I think they came back really early that summer and were playing in June, was it, or at least the very end of May in the final. But it didn't really feel like there was a proper gap. It felt like, okay, we're just going to continue being great and maybe be a little bit greater.
I think the thing with the gap that was quite interesting is we start the season like this. I don't know if you... Just after the World Cup, isn't it? So I don't think Henderson actually starts any of the first maybe 4 or 5 games, because they gave him quite... Because England gets the semi-finals, don't they? And there's not... Like the 12th, it was only about... I think it was only 4 weeks between the final and the first game of the season, maybe 5. But think about it. Van Dijk doesn't go to the World Cup. Ronaldo doesn't go to the World Cup. Keita doesn't go to the World
Cup. Milner plays really well in these first few games, and he really relies on him. He's man of the match in the first game. I think he creates at least 2 of the goals. It might even be 3 if you want to be generous with a deflection, but really steps up. And Gini plays 6 in this game. And I remember there being a real contrast, Phil, between Spurs in particular, like using their England players straight to first game, they've all started, and I'm thinking, fucking hell, do you know what I mean? Oh, all right, but, you know, see how they are in November or whatever. Whereas Klopp obviously felt able to trust some of the lads to ease them back in. And also the new signings a little bit, you know, Fabinho doesn't start, you know, for a little while. Keita is straight in and plays sort of in the first ones. Obviously Alisson's in there, but he's obviously got confidence in enough of the players that he's able to ease in a couple of the new lads and also some of these World Cup players.
You've got to remember, as we've talked about, that they all did play in the Champions League final the season before, so there was still a base of very good footballers there, even if you were adding stuff. And what you did have was a core, but then you were able to add in players. And for
the first sort of 6 weeks, it was a settled team almost. Like, I'm pretty sure for the first, at least the first four, playing midfield three of Milner, Keita and Ronaldo, and it worked really well. I think we conceded one goal, don't we? And that was basically because the goalkeeper tried to Cruyff turn someone nowhere near his goal, got tackled and they scored. And it was a really promising start to the season. I always think if you win your first four games, it gets you sort of mentally believing. It basically means...
feels like a head start almost. You're like, well, we only need 90 points, we've got 12 already.
And this is sort of going back to where we've been the previous few years, but it basically meant that you needed 60 points from 34 games to get in the Champions League again. Which, and we talk about the Champions League, we obviously win it this season, but it wasn't something we'd be consistently in. So being in that position where you make it look like, all right, okay, so that might not be any of our business. That isn't a thing that we need to worry about. It gets you in a position where you can just kick on and go, hang on, right, well, when are the big games coming? When are the absolute big games coming? Because we don't have it's not a particularly difficult start, but it's probably not an easy start. I think we think of Leicester now, in the Championship. That was a hard away game going there at, you know, half 12 on the fourth game of the season. Brighton were, I think this was their second season in the league, and they were all right. They were showing signs. They were good at football. Crystal Palace was never an easy place to go at that period. West Ham were, I think, probably done something all right that season. They might have come 17th, they might have come 6th, but they were a capable side. And when I say that about West Ham, where they had that mad thing where they got rid of Moyes for season, and I can't remember when he came back and stuff like that. But you used to look at them and go, well, Mikel Antonio was up front, he's a handful. And they had a lot of good players. And to get four, it's forwards, but there's no bums, are there? You're not playing sort of ragtag, newly promoted sides like you do in some seasons, and you get 12 points. Like, well, we should get those points. These are points that in some seasons, you know, Palace away and Leicester away have been problems for Liverpool.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. And that is absolutely the case. And we'll talk about these games that Phil's mentioned in a little bit more detail. But just to sort of round up the transfers, we've talked about most of them. But is Firmino on the way home. Naby Keita, who signed the season before but comes in this summer. Shaqiri, who is a great short-term buy. And then obviously Alisson Becker. We do not sign Fekir. That is a bit of a drama. There is pictures of him in Liverpool kit, but it doesn't happen. So we don't get Fekir in. But he do get the others. In terms of out, Emre Can's probably the big name and the one who maybe would have had a part to play in this season, but he decides to decline a contract that he's offered and leaves on a free. There's also Danny Ward and Solanke who are thrown in there because Liverpool get about £30 million for them in total, which, you know, is obviously great business to help, you know, fund some of those sales. If you think that we sold Danny Ward for about the same as we bought Shaqiri, it isn't bad at all. But that's what the squad that they go in with. And
hey there, did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. Give the active people in your life something they'll truly appreciate. Performance apparel from Vuori. Whether they're into running, surfing, hiking, or even just casual walks around the block, there's something for everyone. And if you're not sure what to gift them, you can't go wrong with something from Vuori's Dream Knit collection. It's the perfect gift and so comfortable. Get 20% off your first purchase today at Vuori, Vuori.com/Spotify.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
To win the first game 4-0 against West Ham, and there's just nothing like winning your first game really well at Anfield in the sunshine.
Yeah,
Sean, it's all the hits, isn't it? Let's just win 4-0. Your strikers all score. Salah, Mane gets two. Sturridge comes off the bench, scores another one sort of from a corner. And
You just feel great about it, don't you? The sun's shining, half the coffin in shorts, you've won 4-0, here we go again.
Yeah, no, my reflectors that day are exactly that, really. You know, I remember the sun. I actually remember being really impressed by Naby Keita, and I think, because he came in with such a build-up, wasn't there? Because we signed him the season before, but he doesn't actually join until the start of this season. And he's obviously wearing the number 8 shirt. There was a lot built up about him, and I was thinking, is he the real deal? And I think sometimes you can romanticise things in your head, and I'm probably romanticising looking back or when I was in the ground that day, romanticising looking at him because he's got the number 8 on his back. But I remember him doing a couple of tidy things in that West Ham game when I thought, oof, we've got a player on our hands here. Obviously, you know, what turned out, you know, it didn't quite work out like that in the end. We all know that. But I just remember that day we're coming away from the ground thinking, you know, this is quite positive. I also, like, I watched the goals back before. Like, I watched like quite a few of these things now when I was coming on this. How like ruthless man he was as a finisher. Like the finishes in this game in particular.
Starts this season great. Yeah. He's got I think about 10 by the end of September. Yeah. Maybe not quite that. Yeah. He's got a good number.
That's it. It's ridiculous. And you know, even Sturridge, you know, Sturridge comes on, I think he scores his first touch in this game. So it's again, as you say, you know, we'll say vibes again. It was good vibes, you know what I mean?
On Keita, I don't really remember him in this game, but I do very much remember him at Palace away. Dan, he was brilliant. He does that tear where he just absolutely sends the fella. I watched Palace away in the Croc.
Good day. Ironic, because that's where the Palace defender ended up.
Did you see him? Was he on?
Yeah, well, he might have been in there. So we watched it in the Croc, and then he was it was a Monday night, and then bounded over to the studio to record afterwards. But you are feeling then like we've got a real player, and also, you know, a good team. And Milner gets a penalty, then there's a late one from Sosa Mane off on the break to seal it. But it's a good performance. Like Phil says, Palace away has become one of them where levels are so much trickier than, like, we won our first last six, you know. But I think this might have been the first of the six.
That and Burnley, Liverpool have ended up with like thoroughly almost perfect records over the years, but it's still in all our heads that it's horrible and we always lose. Yes. But if you have a chasing and experience at a place, it does stick with you. So it makes sense. No, I remember the Mane goal from this game. I think Crystal Palace had a corner in the second half. Someone flicks it away. I think it might have been Joel Matip. And then Liverpool are on the break. Salah plays him through. And I think Mane picks it up inside his own half still. And he's got Patrick Van Aanholt to run against, who is not a slow player by any means. And the goalkeeper's coming out, maybe Gaeta at that time, or Hennessy, maybe Wayne Hennessy.
Thank you.
And
who was it who got sent? Was it Wan-Bissaka that got sent?
Can't remember the red card, to be honest. But Mane is battling with Van Aanholt really hard. Van Aanholt is not really making challenges towards the ball. He's just trying to put his shoulder in on Mane, and he has about 4 to 5 different goals, and Mane barely stumbles. And at the end takes one extra big touch to go past the goalkeeper and then slots it into the empty net. Salah as well, after playing the ball through to him, has been sprinting after him to try and catch up and give him a pass. And at no point does he look like he even considers doing it. And Mane in this season, particularly the start of it, was absolutely phenomenal. I think they end up on the same, they share the golden boot, don't they, Mane and Salah, with Son on 22, I think, this season.
Is it Aubameyang or is it Son?
I think it's Son.
Son in my head.
Maybe Aubameyang as well. There was a year there was loads of them. Might have been this. Anyway, it was someone good.
Sorry,
sell on that. But I think looking back on it, I remember thinking at the time that Mane had the better season. I know it's a competition, but Mane at this point, Sean is absolutely right about the ruthlessness of his finishing. It was really clinical. He had every type of shot in his locker: right foot, left foot. The headers he scored around this time were brilliant. But more than anything, he was a really efficient decision maker. So Mane had the ball in the final third, he would always do the right thing with it.
That pace he played at is
exactly, whether that's, you know, carrying it and going on the outside and then trying to put a ball across the 6-yard box to Firmino, whether it's taking a first time shot to catch the keeper off guard, even just like went to press. I remember writing things about him at this time where I know we were into not do detail, but stuff like defensive pressures, tackles in his own half, different ways of like measuring when and how successfully he would press. If you put him against anybody else that played the same position at the time really well, so like Neymar or Sterling was playing really well for City at this time, Sané as well, Hazard was still playing off the left for Chelsea. The attacker metrics might have looked relatively similar, but you'd maybe say, okay, well, Mane's in better form than these people. But in terms of helping the team as a whole, he's completely outstripping these people, even if you added them all up together. And that really sort of ceaseless work ethic combined with always making the right decision without even thinking of the talent in and around the box and stuff like that makes for an absolutely amazing footballer. And I just remember so many times throughout certainly the early part of the season watching him play and just being stupefied by something that he did, because it was just so efficient and so the right thing to do that if you were, you know, a pundit in a studio 3 hours after a match, you might be saying, oh, well, this is what the player should have done. Well, man, he just does it. He just does what someone objectively with all the time in the world would say he should do. I don't think I've ever been as impressed by a player's decision making as much as I have been by Mane in this kind of like 3-4 month period.
Anything jump out for me, Phil, from these first three games, if you like, till the end of August?
To the end of August. I remember Alisson against Brighton. It was where he was dinking the ball over centre back's head 30 yards out. And I think it was the first sign that he was in some ways going to send some people a bit mad. Like, because if I remember correctly, he was under no real threat with any of them. It was just cool as you like, but it was so what you were not used to from a goalkeeper. Yeah. Like, we'd had bits of carriers, but we'd mostly had Mignolet, who was a bit like a...
He's not shipping the ball.
Scarecrow and sort of, you know, very rigid in what he did and his movement not great on the ball and so on and so forth. Now, those people obviously, a week later, did get their, told you so, he shouldn't be doing that, but it showed you what he was about and how it was going to sort of revolutionise the way that the defence was able to play, I think, because I think him coming in had such an impact on how the defence could play, because they could play high up the pitch. They could do basically whatever they wanted because they knew he was behind them. They knew he was going to be able to do... If they needed something clean enough, he'd do it. If there's a shot, he'd probably stop it. If they wanted to go backwards and him use the ball like the way they should use the ball, could do that as well. It was such an upgrade. Like, I think you're hard-pressed to look back through the history of the Premier League and find when a team have upgraded so significantly in a position, I think. Because we went from very middle of the road to probably, well, what do they call him? The Lionel Messi of goalkeepers. That was what someone called him when we signed him, didn't they? And that, it's just not that wide of the mark.
Yeah, no, I think that is fair, because I think you can be sort of too disparaging of Mignolet, I think, sometimes, but he was probably the 7th or 8th best goalkeeper in the Premier League, which isn't awful, but is not good enough for obviously Liverpool Football Club and where he wants to be. So to go from this...
Wasn't even so much as his ability, it was more his suitability.
Yeah,
like,
style.
If he'd have played for the 14th best team, there's an argument he would have looked like the 3rd best goalkeeper.
Well, Sunderland fucking loved him, didn't they? And that was a good Sunderland.
Absolutely. That was more sort of... It wasn't that he was bad per se, although I don't think he was particularly brilliant. It was more he was just completely unsuited to what the football team needed.
It's John Gibbs from the Anfield Wrap with a read, courtesy of NordVPN. NordVPN have been partnering us for a while, and we really appreciate their support. And I personally really appreciate their service, because there is lots of benefits to using a NordVPN. First of all, shielding your data from snoops and criminals. It helps shield your IP address and secures your online traffic with state-of-the-art encryption. You can protect yourselves on public Wi-Fi. So if you want to catch up on your favourite shows or podcasts on hotel Wi-Fi, you can make sure you're the only one listening. It is also available on all your devices, so you can set it up on up to 6 devices with a single VPN subscription. And also, one of the favourite things about it for lots of people, including me, is listening and watching all your favourite shows abroad. So if you are in the UK and you'd like to watch something this weekend, maybe it's Saturday at 3 o'clock, that isn't available in the UK, but is available to watch in other countries, you can download the NordVPN, access different TV networks across the world and enjoy football that way. It also works when you're traveling, of course, so if you don't want to miss your favourite TV shows, whatever they might be, you can use the NordVPN to help you access that wherever you are in the world. We have got a special offer for them as well. So get your NordVPN plan. Go to nordvpn.com/TAW. nordvpn.com/TAW. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast as well. The link is also in our episode description below. Thanks a lot to Nord again, and back to the show.
It's 3 clean sheets from the first 3 games. It's just something I wanted to touch on. The 3rd game we've not really mentioned is it's a 1-0 at home against Brighton. Salah scores. It's a really good press from Liverpool to win it, and Salah just sort of strokes it home. But something I'll just open up to all of you is all 3 games, Virgil and Gomez play centre-half, and Gomez is probably Virgil's most consistent partner in this season. And funnily enough, we were calling this on the Thursday night just before the Prague game. I know it's coming out in the international break, but Jürgen mentioned, he was talking about Joe Gomez the other day, and he mentioned this 18-19 season and how great he was at centre-half. And I'll go to you, Sean, because you're nodding at me. He's brilliant in this season, but he starts the season as Virgil's centre-half partner, and Virgil clearly loves him. They start with three clean sheets, and all season they're just so formidable as a pair.
Absolutely. I think it gets forgotten so much that Gomez started this season centre-half. I always sort of think back to it because he's been so unlucky with injuries, hasn't he? Like, I don't know. We've gone
because Matip finishes it really strong. Yeah.
He's been so unlucky, and I think that I think if you ask Virgil, like, who do you prefer playing with, or who have you preferred playing with the most when they're at the best, I think he might say Gomez, you know, because
he's got him quiet.
Exactly. Yeah, honestly, I think
quickest, isn't he? Which I think probably makes a difference.
That's it, and I think like he's you know, he can come out with the ball. He can do all the stuff that Virgil can do, but you know, obviously in a different style to Virgil. I think it's important. I think, you know, what Phil touches on about the goalie, spot on as well. I mean, you don't realise how much you need a really good goalie, so you've got a really good goalie. I think he just sort of put up with it.
I was very much on that period that it doesn't matter, someone will do it, and then you look at it and go, got that one wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it happened relatively early on. I remember noticing at some point in like early autumn that people were trying too hard with their shots against them. And that still happens to this day. You know, a player gets you know, say played in along the left hand side of the area, and he's 13 or 14 yards out, and he's shooting the goal, and you see so often, especially starting from now, someone kick it that little bit too hard or drag it that little bit too far wide of the far post, because it has to be pristine to beat him. It's not simple enough to go, oh well, hit the target and it might go in. It's not going to fucking go in. And I think people really clocked onto that quite early when they were playing against Liverpool, and that's why, you know, occasionally people will still cry arse about the Highlander that Liverpool play, and it's because they've bought a goalkeeper that they very much trust to just sort out one-on-ones on his own. And I think there may have been one in that Brighton game, perhaps, where
it was an amazing save he makes late on,
where somebody was played in, and
it was,
it might have been after he's made just like three or four perhaps fairly routine saves, but he's made them look really easy. And someone just tried something and ended up completely ballooning the shot, like way up, because he's just tried to absolutely put his foot through it, try and hit the roof of the net because he thinks it's the only way he can beat him. And I remember watching it on the TV while I was away and thinking, he's in people's heads already here, and it hasn't really been that long, and that's a really huge like psychological power to have over people. And as I say, 6 years later, very much still think he has that psychological power over a lot of people.
Yeah, you know you need protein to fuel results, but it's not easy when you're drinking the same bland, chalky shake every day. Stop punishing yourself and get to GNC for the best protein in the game, including all the hottest brands and crave-worthy flavors that'll keep you coming back for more. We're talking protein that legit tastes like cookies, your favorite cereals, indulgent desserts, and more. So bust out of your protein rut and actually look forward to those shakes with unbeatable protein at unbeatable prices. Fuel your fitness with protein at GNC. Yeah.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Our programs and services include Rides to Care, a place to stay closer to treatment, or access to information and day-to-day guidance, all for free. To see how we can help you, visit cancer.org today.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
He does, though, do a bit of a mare at Leicester, which is the first game in September. My memories of this game was, it was the day Andy Thornley got married. And hi, Andy, if you're listening. Andy got married in London, which is where he lives now. And it was, I can't remember if it was a 3 o'clock wedding. This game was early on.
Perfect kickoff time if it was a 3 o'clock wedding.
Well, although we were late, which is a bit embarrassing. So basically, we ended up, I ended up going to the pub to watch it. I watched it. I'm somewhere, I think I'm in Shoreditch or somewhere around there. Anyway, and you know, I went to the pub to watch it. It was one of them where I went down for the first half, and my missus was like, "I'll come and join you once I've done my hair and all the hits." And so I'm there. We go 2-0 up. I'm thinking, this is fine. I'm going to be able to leave early. We'll be at the wedding on time and stuff like that. And then Alison does the rake, and I'm like, sorry, I've got to watch to the end with all the taxi. And then it's never a good look to get to a wedding after the bride, is all I'm saying. But I did it. But obviously, Dorley's a top red. You completely understand. It's better to scouser. Well, she's not a scouser, but she understands these sorts of things. And yeah, everything was fine, and we had a great day. But yeah, I'm blaming Alison Becker for me being late for that wedding, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the divide that day, and I remember he does this thing, and all the Leicester fans are going, 60 million quid for that. And I was like, wonder what they'd be like now.
Yeah.
Because you just got to wear it and go, well, we made a bad mistake. I think we've come accustomed to him. He's sort of got one of them in him every so often. I mean, there's one at Fulham later in the season, isn't there, where him and Van Dijk get mixed up in a way not dissimilar to Arsenal earlier this season, and you sort of just got to almost wear it because it pulls Liverpool out of it so often. He allows the team to set up in a way so often. But yeah, it was quite annoying because it had been comfortable until then as games go, and you're like, comfortable away, no goals conceded, 4 games, that's 10% of the season we've conceded the goal, we're great, we're incredible. Oh no, hang on, we're just going to give them goals like that, are we? And it's left a nervy finish, didn't it?
I think it's a blessing in disguise that happened in that game, because it was the game after that he dinked it over the defender's head and it gave everyone a heart attack. So imagine if he hadn't done that then. Imagine how many more times you'd have dinked it over the defender's head. I think it's like, I remember after the game thinking, I'm glad it's happened when we've won.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I think like if he makes a mistake and we haven't won, and he's sort of new to the Premier League and he's coming in, obviously we know how great he is now and how competent he is to do stuff like that. But you don't know what effect it would have had on him if he would have lost the game, or if he would have drew the game, and it would have been his fault. I think he gets to look at it and go, ooh, all right, I'll sharp up a bit for the next time. I won't do things like that. And I know he has his moments, but I'm glad it happened to me.
These moments do happen, though. He doesn't seem to let it phase him, that he doesn't get in his head or anything like that, does it? He just goes, these things have to move on, which is absolutely fantastic. So I say probably not the worst thing that it happened.
Yeah.
Go to Spurs. I'm just desperate to talk about the Spurs game. I thought we were fucking brilliant. We win this 2-1, and don't get me wrong, there's a 2-1 defeat later, which could have been about 6-1. But this was a 2-1 that really flattered Tottenham. So sometimes games can be like that. The scoreline doesn't tell the full story. And like I say, there's one a little bit later away in the Champions League where we get 2-1, but we're absolute second best. But this one were brilliant. I went to this one. Is this the first one in the new stadium?
No, this is at Wembley.
Is it Wembley? I remember it being big.
Yeah. And that means it's within 12 months of when we went to Wembley and got battered by them. It would have been the previous.
That was October.
It felt big for that reason.
It really did feel like, my God, we've made progress in that 12 months. Phil, he was talking about the 17-18 season before. And the second half of it was absolutely amazing. We weren't, you know, anything like that level in the first sort of 6 months of the 17-18 season. We were playing relatively well. But it felt like there were still significant weaknesses in the team, and then he started to really ramp it up in the second half, especially in the European run. But this felt like a real marker of, okay, we've got up many levels since we last came and played here. And I think their team hadn't changed an awful lot. So it was a pretty good...
This was somewhere they don't sign anybody, isn't it?
There was one of them, wasn't there? I can't remember when.
I think it was this.
Around this time, certainly. I mean, players like Dele Alli would have got better, I'm sure, around this time. But it wasn't like a significantly different side where you could go, maybe they've got a few new lads that are bedding in and they're struggling a little bit. It really was, okay, this is relatively similar. That's a really good benchmark of where we were and where we currently are. And I remember not necessarily, you know, watching it and thinking, oh my God, this is an amazing attacking performance, and they're making chances every 5 minutes and could have scored like 8 or 9. It was more they're in complete control of this game, and they're able to hold this other side at arm's length that's got, you know, really talented attackers and very creative midfield at the time. There was about Ali and Eriksen in it. And it just felt like they were totally in control of them and able to choose the moments to make the game quicker, choose the moments to make it slower. And, you know, in the previous season, that hadn't necessarily been the case. Even when Liverpool were brilliant, it was back and forth and everything was really chaotic, and they were just able to capitalise in the best moments. This felt like, okay, we're really able to just choose how a match plays out against a good team now. And that means that you yourself are a very, very good side.
I think a lot of it comes back to what John says about the first three games or the clean sheets, where we've sorted our defence out. So you think 12 months ago when we play at Wembley and Lovren's as that game that he has, it's like, and what you just touched on there about we weren't really there the first half of 17-18. Van Dijk comes in the January, doesn't he? And all of a sudden things start to change and you can see a massive change. And the Champions League run obviously gives us confidence, but to go that far in the Champions League, when you need to have a good defence, you need to be solid. And I think, you know, when you think of Jurgen Klopp and his time here, you think about Salah, Mane, Firmino, the goals, the strikers, the amazing source of energy that you've got pressing and stuff. But like, it all comes back to having a solid defence. And I think like that's what he based everything on. And I think this game in particular, as you say, you were able to control it just because we've got that solid defence. Because I always think Spurs away is a game that like, there's loads of space, isn't there? There's always loads of space. So if you've got a good attack, you can go, you can always get a goal there, I feel. And I feel like in all the seasons that I feel like we've done well there, we always went on to have a good season, you know, apart from the one when we don't when Nunes goes. But let's ignore that one. But I think like my reflection of this game, I think this is the one where Genie, it just passes the line, doesn't it? It's a header just past the line. And I think Firmino always has a great game at Spurs. So
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think if you can go to Spurs, get results, that again just gives you more confidence to go on and maybe go on and do what we did.
I know this was vibes, not details, sorry, but do you remember the end of this game?
Well, the Lamella scores later, then they have actually a really good chance to equalise. It would have been scandalous.
It was a penalty that they didn't give with like the last kick of the game, which was in a VAR, I would say 100%.
I think the ref's gone, they don't deserve a point.
I think he quite possibly did, because it would have been an absolute scandal if they'd have got a point out of this game. Liverpool were, I think it's obviously five wins in a row, but this is the one where you go, oh, hang on. These were good last season. They're obviously playing in the Champions League because we beat them in the final. So you knew that you weren't playing like just a middle of the road team. You're playing a serious football team, you know, Harry Kane, Son, all the hits, and we were so much better than them. So much better than them. There was levels above the teams, and it gave you a sort of,
I remember.
It gave you a real bounce, because the Champions League starts just after this as well, doesn't it? And it gives you a real bounce that we aren't messing about. I remember people walking on the ground singing about having won five in a row, and it was a big thing, because I can't remember starts particularly, but I'm pretty sure we hadn't done better than five in a row for quite a while at that point. Certainly, you go back, if possibly even not then, to be honest.
I think Julia has one really good start. Yeah. It really might have done it, but yeah, it is incredible.
Yeah, it is. It was, you know, you were sort of getting progressively more excited, because you're like, oh, hang on, that thing that happened last season, that was because we were good. It wasn't like teams get to Champions League finals all the time that, you know, aren't the same the next season, but this team wasn't the same. It was better.
Well, go on then to that Champions League game. I loved this night. It was absolutely brilliant. One of the things I think, there was loads of things I loved about it. So basically, we'd had the brilliant Champions League season the season before, and then when we won this, I was like, yeah, it's going to be another one. We sort of decided it's going to be another one. It was actually a big game, because we had a really tough Champions League group. We're going to come on to talk about Napoli later. They're a really good team. So it felt like one that we sort of not needed to win, but really could do with winning. But I also love when a superstar turns up and he's brilliant. And that happened obviously with Mbappe, who's still a teenager at this point.
I thought you were going to say Sturridge.
Well, Sturridge gets the opener, which is mad. And you sort of forget about Sturridge in this year, because by the end of the season, he's not playing much of a part at all. But, you know, you forget it, you get some big goals. I mean, we're going to come on to talk about a Chelsea game, where he gets an absolutely massive one soon. But there's something that I really like about when someone comes to Anfield and they got a big reputation and they're great. I sort of like it when they come and they're not as well. But when, you know, we go 2-0 up in this game, we're absolutely brilliant. So then Mbappe just turns it on, and obviously he's doing a celebration in front of the cop, which I don't mind at all. But, you know, he sort of does it on his own, and PSG are great. And then Bobby gets his winner and does one of his many iconic celebrations. But it was just a brilliant night at Anfield.
Yeah, and this is probably Liverpool's biggest win in the European Cup for a decade. So Real Madrid 4-0, really. They had the 13-14, and then
Man City was the previous season.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Well, against the foreign side then, I'd say that.
Yeah.
The best team that had come in that Liverpool had dispatched. And this is, I reckon, probably the best PSG side since they were taken over. It was the year that Buffon was in goal, for example. They had some really good players throughout the side, as well as the obvious stars. There's a really... There's a funny verse in a French language rap song by a Belgian rapper about this match.
Unexpected.
Oh, we went doing the email.
This is the kind of detail I'm in it for.
He was speaking his late 20s now. He supports Liverpool. His name is Romeo Elvis, and the song is called Normal. The line would translate to something like, I'm like Meunier, I'm taking over Paris. I'm in the middle everywhere, and it's only Liverpool who can knock me out, or something like that. It flows much better in French, I'll be honest with you.
It's a player I remember it just coming on and I heard it.
I was like, fucking hell, it's about that match. But like Meunier, for example, really good player at the time, and the goal he scored was excellent. This was a real test of like, okay, well, you had the sort of big momentum run to the final the season before, but this is like a really serious side with a good coach, with lots of very experienced players, not just talented ones. The top seeds at the time as well, they would have been, how are you going to fare against these? And it felt like not just the side, but everyone in the ground decided, well, we're going to absolutely give it everything we've got and see where we end up. And we end up with I would say, one of the most, I mean, there's a ton of them, but one of the most iconic European goals at Anfield under the manager. The way he does the drop
off the bench as well, which always makes it more
a celebration.
That's the whole thing. And then sort of the way it travels into the net, it's one of them where you can kind of see it all the way, but you need to wait till it hits the net.
I sit sort of directly behind it, and you could genuinely see it all the way.
It's a really perfect moment, and it's one of them that we've got so many examples of now. But this is one of the, in a European sense, at least one of the earlier ones where it's, you know, sort of clutch time against a really good side. And this is one of them that leads to all the rest, basically. This is Liverpool learning how to never give in against a really good side and how to harness the power of the crowd to make something really good happen.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the crowd there, because I remember the atmosphere being like, because we'd obviously come off the back of some like unbelievable atmospheres with City and Roma. And you're thinking, oh, it's a group game. They're not normally, they're good, but they're never normally that special. I remember getting in the ground going, oof, we're up for this tonight. Like, this is happening. Do you know what I mean? And I think that some of my recollections from the game is just, you know, joked about Sturridge before. I was in the lower centenary, just on line with the penalty box. I remember just watching him, thinking, he is absolutely goosed.
Yeah. I was going to say, he was brilliant till he wasn't. It was his greatest game until it's like, fucking hell, get anyone on for this.
Honestly, I remember going, oh my God, he is knackered. But then I was even thinking that before he scored. Then he scores, and you're like, well, that's why he plays. He's a goal scorer. Do you know what I mean? And as Dan's, you know, summed up perfectly the ending. You know, we all know what that was. But I just think it was a good game to come back to after a big European run. Because if it would have been like, you know, someone who's maybe not as well known as PSG coming back, maybe the atmosphere's not as good. Maybe the vibes are not as good. Go back to that again. I think it was a good one.
I remember being like really quite unenthused about the prospect of it after we just had a final. Like, it's a group game, doesn't really matter, and as it turns out, the goal is vital in us getting out of the group. So I was, you know, got that one wrong as well. But it was mixing it with big European team, because the previous season we obviously get to the final, but we don't really have a big team at home, do we? There's Manchester City, but as you mentioned before, it's,
you're playing
when it's a European team, when it's an English team, it's not quite the same, because who did we play in the last season? Porto wasn't it?
So, yeah.
So the knockouts are Porto, Manchester City, and Roma, and like they're all big teams in their own right.
We were better than two of them.
They're not like Roma in a semi final. Isn't like, oh, bang up for this is you beating Roma in a semi final. Whereas this is like, you look at that team, that their team this season was incredibly good. Mm. Like, the return fixture, which we'll come on to in a later show, is, I think it might be the best I've ever seen a team play against Liverpool. They were that good. They were incredible. And that says everything about what an achievement this was. And to do that, and it made you feel, hang on, this is great, this. We are good.
100%. It was a fantastic night on Anfield. I can still hear the crowd. I can still feel the atmosphere. And it was absolutely exceptional. Sports Social Podcast Network.